I'm Chris, the host of True Believers, a comic book podcast, my weekly show about all things comics and loosely pop culture. This episode of True Believers is a doozy. I needed an easy episode because I'm incredibly busy right now. I'm not gonna lie. As you know, I'm producing a show about all things comics and loosely pop culture, but also I'm still acting in support of the striking WGA and SAG-AFTRA members until the strike is resolved to the satisfaction of all parties involved. So that sort of leaves my attempts at loosey-goosey a bit stunted, a bit cut off. You know what I'm saying? So we all know what a fan film is, right? Original stories, continuations, and adaptations of characters or settings from established properties made by fans. Easy enough. These can be made from anything from film and television to comics, novels, games, and even Saturday morning cartoons. Especially Saturday morning cartoons. But today? Today we moonwalk ourselves back to the past, and then we drive our DeLoreans back to the future while we study two films based on one of my favorite superheroes ever. The so-called Spider-Man of Dakota City, favored son of the Big Bang, he of the gas station of solitude himself, Mr. Virgil Ovid Hawkins, aka Static, putting a shock to your system since 1993. Created by Milestone Comics founders McDuffie, Cowan, Davis, Dingle, and Priest, Virgil Hawkins was an average boy who developed superpowers after his involvement in a gang war while trying to seek revenge on his bully. The police broke up the fighting by dousing the gang members with some experimental, dangerous, definitely radioactive gas that they called quantum juice, or Q juice for short. It cannot be stressed enough that nobody knew what this stuff did. This event came to be known as the Big Bang, and this episode is about 2012's Static Shock Blackout, written, directed by, and starring Stephen Diesel, and 2022's Static Shock Origin 1, written by and starring Corey Lattimore and directed by Marcus Evans. So, just to let you know where I stand with Static Shock Blackout, how many people remember a little website called Tumblr? I'm not even gonna lie, I still use Tumblr to this day. You'll just never find me. I actually remember when Static Shock Blackout came out. I actively was looking for Static Shock related materials on Tumblr for a class project I was doing. I remember finding the guy's Tumblr, and I had never seen a fan film before. I didn't know that that was an enterprise that one could undertake. Fun fact, having said Enterprise, there are so many Star Trek fan films that actually star a lot of the original actors. But Static Shock Blackout, I remember when they had the Kickstarter campaign. I didn't have any money, so I just shared it around so that people would see it. And I was really excited to see it be made. I love this movie. And one of the first things that's done to make you really love the film is to dedicate it to Dwayne McDuffie, who had recently passed away in the years before it was made. And I remember seeing that and finding it really touching. This is a really cool movie. I like to say movie instead of film because I think film sounds pretentious. This is where the end of the editing is because I'm not willing to edit anymore. I breathe really, really hard and I'm really excited. But I really want this episode to go out on time. So the first couple minutes were really polished, but we're in the wild, wild west now. And I might take a drink a couple times because sometimes you need a little bit of water. The first thing we see in the film is Virgil Hawkins changing either into or out of his Static outfit, which is very charmingly homemade, but also clumsily terrible. I didn't exactly remember how the story was told, so I became interested to see that it sets itself up as a mockumentary, but then veers away from that storytelling style. I really like mockumentary. It's like my favorite. I wouldn't necessarily call it a genre of film because mockumentary can be about anything, but it is a method of like storytelling. And it's really, really cool. We see Virgil on Richie's camera. We see news reports coming in about a vigilante in Dakota City. We see that the first image of him comes from Daisy Watkins. But then we shift to Daisy's perspective with a voiceover that also led me to believe that this was a mockumentary because I assumed somebody was filming from the back seat. Like, not that someone was filming from the back seat of the car, which is something that's obviously happening in front of my very eyes. Like, I could see that was happening. I honestly thought that there was supposed to be in universe a person in the back seat of Daisy, and I believe our cameraman's name was Enzo, as just another element of the storytelling. But honestly, it was just a really interesting camera angle. This isn't a mockumentary. It's pretty much just, it is what it is on the tin. The most interesting thing about it to me, coming at it from a filmmaker's perspective and as an actor and a writer myself, which sounds so pretentious when you say it, but I see film school makes you see things differently. Don't go to film school if you want to just enjoy movies. Enjoy being unaware. But I pretty much, despite the fact that I bill myself as a hater, I love so many earnestly terrible things. And I don't want to call this earnestly terrible because I think it's very well made. We see that there is a little bit of a continuity error because we see in the paper that the first shot, the first real picture of Static comes from Daisy Watkins, who is one of Virgil's girlfriends. I don't remember if she's his girlfriend in the comics or if she's just his girlfriend for a time in the show. Hold on. Is Daisy in the show the disposable black girlfriend trope? I'm going to reassess that later. So Daisy, in this fan film, she's an adult woman. She's a reporter with a webcast or some kind of web broadcast, but that's pretty much webcast. In 2012, that was kind of ridiculous. I was like, oh, so she's like a blogger? Who cares what some random broad on the internet thinks? But seeing the rise of, and I don't even mean to give them credit for this, but just seeing the rise of the Shade Room, and I'm not calling her a Shade Roomsterina, but I was like, oh my gosh, this was so ahead of its time. This was so forward thinking. And it was very fun. It was just funny to see, like, I'm like, okay, so Daisy's, like, I spent a few minutes really thinking about this. I was like, no, I'm pretty sure that Virgil's still young, so, I don't know. This is an origin story. This, nobody in the world knows who Static is. The only vision of him we have is, like, a rough sketch. It looks like a police sketch. They're trying to unmask him for some reason, but ever since I watched the movie Man of Steel, and I'm not trying to crap on Amy Adams, as you know, that's my girly for real. I think trying to unmask your city's superhero when there are villains, or even just on the grand scale of things, like Man of Steel, I was like, why are you looking into this man? This has nothing to do with you. Why are you so determined to ruin his life? I've never been more, what's the word? I've never been more critical of Lois Lane ever until I saw that movie. Literally, Lois Lane could put a bunch of people in danger by jumping off Niagara Falls to force Superman to reveal himself, or, I don't know, see Clark Kent in his civilian clothes, aim a loaded gun at him and shoot, forcing him to reveal himself as Superman. And then, when confronted, saying that she could have put someone in danger, and reply, how could I have done that? There were only blanks in the gun, and I would stand behind her 10 toes down. There is almost nothing Lois Lane could do that would make me turn against her. They could never make me hate you, even though what you were doing wasn't tasteful. Now you out here looking so ungrateful. I'ma keep it moving. Be classy and graceful. I think that was Nicki Minaj. And if it was, I'm almost certain that's that video with the game in it. Back when the game was doing that thing where he posed around in his underwear. So I saw a lot of him for like a full year straight. Anyway,
I think that trying to unmask a superhero as a reporter or even just as a civilian person, just as a person who has literally seen Spider-Man's entire mask fall off, Hannah Montana's wig fall off, and various other expositions of a secret identity, and having entire large groups of people decide that really isn't our business, we rock with you, and this is a secret that we're just keeping. I think that is such a level of hating ass bitchery. I was like, why are you trying to unmask him? What are you doing? I'm on my guard already. This film, it had some of the big things that we really like about the Static Shock animated series. But it does draw a lot from the comic books too, which I think is cool. But I feel like with what I've seen so far, and I've watched a lot of Static Shock fan films over the years, I think I want to do a thing where I explore them more to see what gets adapted more, the comics or the animated series. And I really want to see how the, not Milestone Returns, but whatever they're doing now, the new Milestone comics, I really want to see how that affects the way that fan films are being made. Because I know that the animated series affects a lot of how the fan films are made. What I noticed from the two that I watched today, they both draw a lot from the animated series as opposed to comics, in conjunction with the comics, but there is one major thing. Richie Foley does not exist in the comics. He's got his friend Rick Stone, who is an LGBT icon. And I really just wanted to say it like Andrew because I miss him. He has this way of saying LGBT icon. I don't know why it tickles me as much as it does, but it does. And I feel like Rishi was created for the comic books because I know that there are some HABs at a certain company who wouldn't just let his friend be great in the show. So they were like, no, we need a new friend. And I feel like adaptations of Static Shock always have Richie, even though I'm like, he doesn't, but you know, I think it's fun. And to see how the new comic books that are being made influence the Static story as well, because I actually don't like the new run of Static comics for a reason that I would have to elaborate on at a later date, because I have gotten into so many passionate, and when I tell you passionate arguments about the original Static comics, the original Milestone comics, what they mean and what they're trying to say, and actually one of my greatest internet nemesis, I don't know the plural for that word, one of my greatest ops on the internet is this man who I got into it with about the Black Lightning TV show, and you're wondering what that could possibly have to do with Static. So am I, because this man is the world's biggest idiot, doesn't know what he's talking about, has never cracked a comic book, and I hate him, and I hope he gets kicked in the leg by a little child coming out of church, just right in the knee. I don't want him hurt, because I don't want anybody hurt, but I do want him inconvenienced and upset. That had nothing to do with anything in this film. I'm sorry. And speaking of the influence of the animated series in Static Shock Blackout, there's a dude. He is called Dre, and he appears in one scene. This is really the epitome of a short film that is meant to be an origin story, and both short fan films I chose are actually origin stories. Because it introduces a character who was exclusive to the animated series until the new run of Milestone Comics, Ebon. Originally called Ivan Evans, he is like the master of the shadows. He is one of my very favorite characters from the animated series. He is so fun. I have a thing about the dark. I don't necessarily enjoy it. I am very afraid of what lurks in darkness. But I'm also very fascinated by it, and I'm very fascinated by the way that darkness is portrayed. Although I know it's not the intention, because the show was made by Black people, honestly, for a Black audience, which you can just tell from the way that it's made. I don't like that the darkest dude on this show is literally, like, the villain. He is the villain. There are other people who are more villainous because Ivan is a very sympathetic character, especially when we start getting into his backstory, when we see the relationship that he has with his brother, who is played by the love of my life. Okay, he's not the love of my life. He is... he is a man who played a character on a situation comedy that I very much enjoy. It's Kadeem Hardison. I love Kadeem. He plays Rubber Band Man on the show, which is irrelevant except for the fact that they're brothers. But I was thrown off initially by the fact that the dude, Dre, who's only in one scene, he shows up and he's at the door of some random building and he's like, hey, yo, I want to speak to Larry. And the dude at the door is like, ain't no Larry here. He ain't been Larry in a while. I'm like, who is Larry? And then he goes in to see Ebon, and they're doing this really cool thing where they, you know, when you do shadow puppets with your hand, they're doing an effect that's kind of like that. And it probably to some degree really is just somebody in front of lights, just manipulating their body around to simulate Ebon's effects. But they do this really great special effect where he emerges from darkness and he doesn't even fully appear. Like, he kind of kitty prides in. He's like half in, half out, like, yo, what up? And he lays out his big plan without really explaining what it is. And he's like, Virgil Hawkins don't see it our way, so we're gonna make everybody see, or whatever. And I was like, okay, this is corny. But it's interesting. They never said what the plan was, but he did have a map of the city, which I love. I love a classic villain plan. I love it when it doesn't get too spooky ooky. I like it when it's just, when it's simple. Like, Tony Baker, he's a comedian. He has this show on YouTube called Travis Santiago Villain. And the thing that old boy is always trying to do is poison the city's water supply. I have no idea why it's as funny as it is, but it is. Because one thing about me, I can spot a villain plan anywhere. I'm like, it's all about real estate. They're trying to poison the water supply. And I'm sitting up like, well, didn't Ebon have a plan just like this in the show? And I Googled it. And it turns out, yes, he did. It just had nothing to do with what the plot of this fan film is. So really, it's almost like he did not. The last episode of Static Shock is called Power Outage. And basically, the plot is the city of Dakota is sick of these Bang babies. They're sick of the Big Bang. They are tired of the supervillain shenanigans. Because there are, I don't want to say that there are so few good Bang babies just because the inciting incident of the Big Bang was a gang war, but there really aren't that many law-abiding citizens who have these powers. So it's like 50% I understand. And in the cartoon, it's an accident that the Big Bang happens. It's an accident, not a complete accident, because the police did treat them like animals, like they did in the comic. But there was the gas at the docks where the gang war was happening. They did not actively throw that gas on those people. So in Power Outage, they all of a sudden, everybody's getting weaker, all the Bang babies, like their powers. And then they get on the news and they're like, hey, so we found a cure for the Big Bang. And we've kind of been dosing the city with the cure for weeks. So pretty soon, there shouldn't be any more Bang babies. And the former Bang babies really take offenses. Like, Static and Gear are like, how could this happen? Like, this city, I feel like it really still needs Static and Gear. And I'm like, yeah, because I don't think this will be the end of your crime problems, considering how many crossovers you've had with the greater DCAU. I remember thinking that as a little kid, and then actually when HBO Max came out and they had every episode of Static Shock, I thought it again then, because I was like, this really isn't going to solve any of your problems.
That's like people who say that Gotham City is only bad because Batman lives there. No. This was already a place that was filled with crime. We were already filled to the brim with crime. This is just the kind of city that can only stop crime with another maniac in a costume. Maybe the criminals didn't wear costumes before, but at least now we can easily identify the criminals because of their loud costumes. So basically, Ebon gets together with some other people who were in his crew or whatever, and he's like, he's telling everybody that we're gonna be the only bang babies because I've got the last of the Q juice. I don't think they call it Q juice in the show, but so there's this whole thing. It's the series finale to Static Shock. Ebon and Hot Streak, I think they end up fused together or something. I don't know, something stupid. And Static and Gear do end up keeping their powers. But I don't understand how they did. If there's still a cure that they've been releasing all over the city, like when my city decided that they were going to spray for mosquitoes to combat the Zika virus a couple years ago and none of us could go outside during the best time of year to be outside. Now, Daisy does not stop on her haterish brigade to try and unmask my man. For some reason, Frida's helping her. They never explain the sequence of events in this story, but I still like it. I thought it was a really earnest effort. I think the special effects are actually really cool for the time. They do have a corny point where Static says that he put a shock to their system. There's this suit is so horrible. We have a random scene with some guys on a roof. Static ends up fighting. And there's a moment where you become concerned as the viewer that he will not do the honorable thing, where you see him in front of some downed opponents. And because of the way the situation has escalated, we're not sure in which way this situation is going to go. And even though Daisy and Enzo, her cameraman, and I really do believe this man's name was Enzo, they're the only people there aside from Virgil and the criminals, we as the audience are conflicted in being able to figure out what's about to happen next. But it takes pains to remind us that Virgil is not a killer. He doesn't attack them any more than he needs to because that's not who he is and that's not the point of this film. It's not a traditional origin story in that he's already an established superhero, even if he is underground, even if his suit is so terrible. I love it. I love this suit. I love a first take suit. Even, I don't know who it's protecting, not now body, but I love it. So much of superhero origin stories, particularly Black superhero origin stories, they're about identity in a way that I feel like origin stories of white superheroes are not, because to be a superhero, to be a Black person, honestly, in the world is very complex as an identity unto itself when you live in a world that is not made for you. So when you introduce an extra element of marginalization, superhero thing or superpowers, any additional thing that might make you feel like you were different, feel like you were alone. And in this film, Virgil is literally the only superhero of his universe, which is established in like one of the first scenes. I didn't just pull that out of my butt. It's important to establish a character's identity because as a Black superhero, you have to be everything. You have to be a role model. You have to be a paragon of excellence. You can't let them see you sweat. And I feel like as the quote-unquote Spider-Man of Dakota City, Static really exemplifies that. He is asked, actually in one of my favorite And one of my favorite comics from Milestone Media, although I can't think of which one it is right now, and it's probably Long Hot Summer. I don't know why I'm pulling that one out of my butt, and I'm not going to verify this later. It's like he said he felt that when he got gassed, he was asked a question by the universe, and he was asked what he expected, and when asked, he said, "I expect justice," and with his great power comes his great responsibility to be the person who gets the justice. He's the only person who can stand up to the threats that he's facing. And so he does. So, in closing, how do I feel about Static Shock Blackout? I'm not gonna lie, I really like it. I'm gonna give it a 8 out of 10, but I'm only taking away points because they never clarify that Daisy's story that is shown at the beginning takes place after the events of this short film. It is very brief. We don't actually see the conclusion of what Static is working on throughout the film, trying to stop Ebon, which, again, it's a short film. It was made over 10 years ago. I'm really over it. The point's off again because the suit is so terrible. It literally has like frayed string. Like, I think I probably could have made a better suit, but that's also because I could sew. But also, I kind of want to give it a half point back just because it is like the kind of suit a teenage boy would make for himself. And also because I really hated Ebon's little... He has like a riddle at the end, and I was mad that I understood the riddle because it was corny. So 8.5 stars. Actually, I'm going to go ahead and give it 9 because it gets another 0.5 stars from the fact that the man who stars in it is also the writer and the director. That is like Sylvester Stallone. He is like, "I believe in myself." And it seems like that belief has been rewarded. I looked him up in kind of a where are they now, and according to his own website, he is a graduate of Carnegie Mellon, and his work has been showcased at the Holly Shorts Film Festival, the American Black Film Festival, the Phoenix Film Festival, the Boston Sci-Fi Film Festival, and the Lebanese International Film Festival. Which, that one was kind of interesting to me because his website also said that he was bilingual, and it didn't specify what the other language was, so I think it'd be kind of cool if he spoke Lebanese. Or, I actually don't know what language that they speak in Lebanon. Even though I know several people from Lebanon, they all speak more than 3 languages. So, it could be anything. It's just never come up. His YouTube is still active as of 6 months ago when he released another project. And I'm really happy to see that this brother is still following his dreams. And now, we are brought to Static Shock Origin 1 from Endless Entertainment. Which was kind of a, I don't want to say a misnomer just because it came out last year and there wasn't a 2. I did go on their YouTube expecting to see a 2, but they perhaps just have not made it yet. It opens with Virgil and Richie, who are so, so, so cute. Both actors playing Virgil and Richie, they're really cute kids. And I don't know why I pointed that out. But they were so cute. Virgil had the cutest hair, and Richie, he looked like a little boy that my mom taught a couple years ago. So I was like, oh, look at you. You know what? Actually, this film is written by the guy who plays Virgil. So perhaps calling them cute kids is maybe not appropriate. We're probably a little bit closer in age than I thought. But they were adorable. And like I said, I really, really like Corey Lattimore's hair. He has great hair. So when the film opens, there's this nasty ass old lady named Miss Johnson who... No, ma'am. And it's like she propositioned Richie, and I just was like, that's gross, and wanted to move past that. And I don't understand. I'm not trying to crap on this because I did enjoy watching it. I don't understand what the point of this was. It was an origin story, but Static has a pretty clearly defined origin story. But it kind of reminded me of is Thor 3 the Ragnarok one, because it reminded me of that scene where he's fighting Cate Blanchett and she's beating the dog crap out of them, and she leans him, she plucked out his eye or something, or she, no, I don't remember that movie very well. None of the Thor movies are very good, but at least three of them are really fun, so, you know, there's that. So Cate Blanchett, and she has had previously ripped out his eye at some point, and she kind of leans him over the banister in the castle, and he has a vision of his dad, who is Anthony Hopkins, which is kind of weird but interesting. And it's kind of an interesting mythological moment, because I know that Odin Allfather has one eye because he sacrificed it so that he could have the knowledge of magic or something. And then he hung from the world tree for like 7 days or something. And that's what the hangman card in tarot like represents. So that's just an interesting fact. I thought it was interesting that he like, she hung him upside down and then he got the knowledge, and his dad was like, he's like, I need my hammer, dad. And his dad's like, are you the god of hammers or something? And Thor is like, oh my god, no, I'm not the god of hammers. And he has like a whole epiphany, and he like jumps up to the, I think it was that Immigrant song. And he's like, ah, ah. And Thor is on 27. He's like raring and ready to go. And then they start having a knockdown, drag out fight. You're wondering what this could possibly have to do with Static Shock. So was I. So when they said origin story, they really meant this. They did this cool thing where Virgil is wearing a like blue puffer jacket or like a coat, but like a thin coat, and a yellow shirt. And I like that kind of evocative costuming. He's not wearing a Static outfit remotely, but the outfit that he has on does let you know. It's a little bit of a show not telly that this Virgil Hawkins is also Static. And I can, you know, I can respect that. So the events of this, okay, so for some reason Virgil goes into the store, Richie doesn't, and he's getting robbed by some little ass boys. Like, they, for real, Virgil said, oh my god, Richie, these are freshmen. And I was like, oh my god, yes. They look like middle school boys trying to rob somebody. And honestly, I think if some middle school boys tried to rob me, I would beat the dog shit out of them. Like, just on principle. Just because you had the audacity to try and rob me. And it looks like it's some kind of gang initiative. There's no motivation for this. This movie, like the other movie, just throws you in the middle too, because he's already an established Static, but I spent so much of this movie not understanding if he was Static or not. I had no idea where this was going at any point. And if you've ever seen the show Letterkenny, it has some really ... interesting fight scenes. And by interesting, I mean they're like comically bad. Like, it's like in the Adam West Batman show where he punches and then the screen is like, pow, wham, skidoogie. Or probably not skidoogie. I don't know where that sound came from. There's no, the bullies, or they honestly look like some kind of gang. I thought it was a gang initiation, because I was like, why do these two little kids look so bold? Some guys came out of the wood. They came in from everywhere. It was like in a movie where you get raided by the FBI and they like burst down the door and they start swarming in from like every entrance. I was like, I could swear when Richie got grabbed, I was like, I could swear there were more of them. I'm only seeing like two little boys now. No, there was like six of them. And this dude came up and hit him, and it was like Friday. Like, you got knocked up, you know. I was again, there's no motivation for this. And then we have a flashback. First of all, we didn't even have a flash present. I have no idea why any of this is happening. And then it's Virgil talking to his mom. And I was really excited because, to the uninitiated, Virgil's mom is not dead in the comic books. And in a lot of the adaptations I've seen of Static Shock, or like the fan films or whatever, or even people's premises for what they would make a Static Shock film, or what they would want to see a film about, in every single version, when I tell you they killed this boy's mom. And I promise you, she is not dead. She is fully alive and kicking around Dakota City. And then I was like, oh my gosh, this is mommy. Hi, Virgil's mommy. She was so cute. The lady that played his mom was so cute. He got the dog shit beat out of him before he came home and was trying to skedaddle up the stairs before she could see him. It didn't work. She's like, oh my God, son. Low-key, his mommy said, I gotta blame the victim because you make it too easy on them. In the comic books, they literally moved to a suburb in Dakota because there was too much gang activity in their original area. So she's asking him, like, why don't you live up to your potential? Like, and he's like, I can't. And so I guess, like I said, this is a flashback. So I guess in the future, like in the present, he's like, this is his first time ever fighting back against these bullies. And like, when he showed up 2 months ago in this flashback, he had got his clock cleaned. So I'm like, you ain't never, ever fought back. Like I said, I'm impossible to bully because I always have been. Because you can't bully me unless you can whip my ass. Virgil is clearly bullyable because they beat the crap out of him. He had been beaten. His mom was like, you got to stand up against the bullies. I'm like, Virgil's mommy, that does not always work. Like, even in Friday, Craig had to get that brick to get Debo. He had to get that brick. Having a gun don't make you a man, but having a brick does, you know? And low-key, I was like, maybe we do need to blame the victim a little bit because you ain't never tried to get sturdy on him. Like, and he's literally in the future, like in the present, taking these licks. And then we're in a montage with just different scenes from his life, but they kind of cycle back. It kind of reminded me, both of these static films actually reminded me of the different works of Ryan Coogler, because in Static Shock Blackout, I was reminded of the, show him who you are. Ah, I am T'Challa, son of King T'Chaka. And blah, 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 blah. It's not like I have the whole challenge memorized or whatever. Like, I mean, I low-key do, but I'm not going to sit up and recite it for you so Disney can, I'm not trying to get pre-canceled by Disney and get my podcast taken down, right? So that kind of reminded me of that. And then in this film, I was reminded of one of the end scenes in the first Creed movie, Conlon versus Creed, when Donnie is knocked out clean, like booty up in the air, cheek on the canvas. And while the countdown is going, he has a montage of his life meeting Marianne in foster care, his father Apollo in the ring. Well, actually, no, it's him and it's Apollo's last. It's like him, him and Rocky, him and Bianca meeting his mother, Marianne. I think the fight with Danny Stuntman Wheeler, who is also very cute. Like, I never see that actor in anything. I don't know if he's a boxer and then he just acted in these two movies or if he's like an actor and maybe we should see Danny Stuntman Wheeler some more. But the whole setup to being in the Creed movies is being fine. If you are not at least a 9, you are not going to get cast. Point blank, period. Don't look to star in the Creed movies if you are not fine as hell. That's the line. I mean, it is what it is, and I'm sorry about that, except that I'm not, because everybody who listens to this podcast or knows me in real life, and I said those two things separately because I know a lot of my friends are fake hosts who don't listen to my podcast. Everybody who knows me even remotely knows that I'm highly shallow. So when I'm seeing this montage while Virgil's getting beat up, it reminds me of that scene near the end of Creed where he has this montage and then he sees a vision of his father, Apollo, victorious, strong, wonderful. Carl Weathers, the cutest man I've ever seen in my life. He's so adorable. And he like, ah! And like rears up and he's ready to go. He beats the count. So Virgil, he has his montage and then all of a sudden his eyes start sparking and this is where the Thor 3? Yeah, this is where the Thor comparison comes in because I'm like, there's a very specific way that he got his powers and it was just interesting. And I didn't mean to recap the whole movie Because I do think it's still worth watching, even though I think also the special effects for the and the special effects for the power scene were very rudimentary. But I also am horrible at special effects. Like, that's not my ministry as a filmmaker. And I do think this is an emerging production company with a lot of room to grow as artists. And I think that is important. I think that's where we need to be. And I think it's really cool that Corey Lattimore wrote this movie, even though I don't understand it. Writing and starring in something is the kind of thing that I do and have done. I just don't like to direct myself. I'm not good at it. And also, I am working on becoming a better director because I have horrible people skills. And I will literally just be like, move! Move to the left! Move to the right! Say the lines better! And that's not conducive to the whole process. Like, how am I helping anybody's method? I'm not even helping my own directorial method. My last note is the special effects are so damn terrible. I'm sorry. I'm very sorry. Like, I really enjoyed watching this, actually. Even though I didn't understand it, I thought it was an interesting origin story. And I honestly think they should make some more. Just because I'm like, nothing of the sort is an origin story until the last, like, minute. But I had fun watching it. It was not a waste of my little 10 minutes. I think everybody should go out. I think it's important for us, especially now with the strikes going on with WGA, SAG-AFTRA. I think it's important that we show love to our emerging artists. When the last writer's strike happened, I was introduced to so many wonderful indie projects that were coming out. And so many, I had never seen so many original films, short films, new plays. I know I was a little kid, but my mom was really interested in me, I don't know, just having a really broad cultural knowledge. So we did a lot of stuff when I was a little kid, and we had a lot of fun. My mom's a really good mom. Not to flex on you guys or anything. I don't know. What I'm saying is, now with the greater access to the world that we have, it's easy and important for us to be able to connect and to encourage our next generation of artists, our next generation of creators, directors, writers, actors. And I feel like the internet has given us the ability to see so many wonderful things from all over the world. So why not take advantage of it? That's all for this week's episode of True Believers. Please join me next time, where we'll delve deeper into the extraordinary realms of imagination and keep exploring the infinite possibilities. I'm still kicking around some ideas for what I want my next episode to be, so, you know, I'll see you when. I meant to say then. True Believers is available on all major streaming platforms and a member of the Hall of Pods Podcasting Alliance alongside the SJW Comic Book Club, The Fandom Optimist, and Cape Corner. And we can all be found in the link tree below. And as always, if you want to leave a suggestion on what I read or watch, you can find and DM me on the podcast, social media. Email me at number1truebelieverspod@gmail.com, join our Discord, or visit our website, number1truebelieverspod.wixsite.com/1TBPOD.
Hit that like and subscribe, guys!
Okay, that's perfect.